You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. The first show in this second hour is the Maggie Dawn Show. And filling in for Maggie Dawn is Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang, who sit down with Judge Chris Taylor, who's a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, to talk about her campaign.
Actually, Maggie's not here. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm guest hosting for Maggie today, along with my stellar co-host, Angela Lang. We like to do this together over the last several months, and it's always a joy, Angela, to be here with you.
Same. Likewise. And thanks, Judge Taylor, for being here.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me.
We've got appellate court judge Chris Taylor on the stream with us. She is running for Wisconsin Supreme Court. And you can join our conversation anytime by phone or by text. The number for both is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. If you want to talk with Judge Taylor, just give us a holler. Judge Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
You know, Justice Susan Crawford was sworn in just the other day. Were you there? What do you make of her ascendancy?
Oh, I was just so thrilled. Just absolutely thrilled. I was so proud of the people of the state of Wisconsin who rejected the efforts of the richest man in the world to buy a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I just was inspired by that. I was so proud of the people of the state. I was so proud to be from Wisconsin. And I thought it was a great celebration of the democratic process and the people having the say, the ultimate say in who they elect to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So it was a celebration, in my opinion. It was a celebration of democracy, judicial independence, fairness. I just have the utmost respect for Justice Crawford. I served with her when I was a circuit court judge. She's going to do a great job. She is just so conscientious and so committed to considering the different sides and issues and applying the law in the most just way that she can. So I'm really excited to see that and see her there.
It was an inspiring victory and a black eye for Elon Musk. And he deserves them.
We needed that. I mean, so with that being said too, that was going to be one of my first questions is like, what are the lessons learned from the Crawford campaign? I mean, We've been dealing with state Supreme Court races and tensions for years now, right? We've kind of gotten used to it. But the last cycle felt very different. There was this new element with, you know, the Trump administration and Elon with these $1 million checks. What are any lessons learned? Because I think we also might be entering some new territory if that's how our last election was. What are you thinking about doing things differently the next time?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I think one thing that people are really realizing is that they are not going to be able to depend on the U.S. Supreme Court to protect our democracy and to protect our rights. That is going to happen in the state. And this, what it's going to come down to, I think, given the abdication of the U.S. Supreme Court on their role in checking unlawful conduct by the other two branches of government, is it's going to come down to our state Supreme Court to really stand up for people, to really defend our democracy, to really defend due process and people's constitutional rights. And so I think that was something that the people of the state of Wisconsin really understood. I also think the other thing that's happening is people are really seeing how important it is to have an independent judiciary, to have a judiciary that's not under the thumb of the other two branches of government. And I really saw this so clearly when I was in the legislature and there were things happening. And I remember thinking, wow, some of these bills that are being passed are just not good for the people. They're not lawful. They're not constitutional. But at that time, we didn't have a state Supreme Court that was willing to check the state legislature. And it was a terrible feeling, a very helpless feeling, because the court, that is one of the central roles of the state Supreme Court, is to make sure the other branches of government are not acting in unlawful and constitutional ways. So I think people are really understanding the importance of the court. And then I think the third lesson is that people want the court not only to be independent and not only to check the power of the two other branches, but they want a court who's in their, on their side, who's going to be in their corner, who is going to stand up for everyday Wisconsinites, not the most powerful special interests, not the people who have all the power. And that's really what I think Justice Rebecca Bradley, who I'm running against, that has been what she's done. I think that she has not stood up for the people of the state of Wisconsin, but has been under the thumb of these right-wing special interests like the Federalist Society and these other groups that have a lot of power. But for me, this campaign is about, and I think Susan Crawford's victory is about the power of the people collectively, mm-hmm. that they should be at the center of their government, and they have the power to control that, to control their government and to make sure their government is really standing up for them and is really reflecting what they need from the judiciary, what they need from the legislature. So I think those are three lessons, certainly, that I'm watching and learning, but I think our state has really shown the country and the world that we're understanding that really clearly here in Wisconsin.
We're speaking with Judge Chris Taylor, who's running for the state Supreme Court. And now you're sure Rebecca Bradley is running? I guess she hasn't raised any money.
That was going to be my question. I'm like, are we sure she's running?
Well, you know, she said she's running. She announced the night that Susan Crawford was elected, when she also said she did not want to work with Susan Crawford, which I was really quite appalled by those comments.
It was tacky, in my opinion. Well, it was tacky.
And
I will say that. You don't have to. I will.
Well, this is what I'm going to say as an appellate court judge now, is it's particularly concerning because we write decisions in panels. Mm-hmm. I do write some individual decisions on the appellate court, but mostly I'm writing in a panel of three judges, and the Supreme Court writes in a panel of seven. I mean, they sit around a conference table and talk about, okay, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to, as appellate judges, listen to our colleagues, consider other opinions, because, you know, I know I don't know everything. I know I learn from my colleagues, and hopefully they're learning from me. And so that discussion that happens when you're reviewing a case and when you're looking at the briefings and going through oral argument is so critical in reaching the best decision. And so if you're not willing to do that, you should not be on the appellate court.
I mean, she has shown Rebecca Bradley, the bad Bradley, as we call her on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that she doesn't have the judicial temperament to be there. I mean, she is vile toward even her fellow conservative, Brian Hagedorn, both in writing decisions and then in public comments about them. So it's just a very peculiar approach to collegiality. I mean, she's not collegial at all, as referenced by her comment that she didn't want to work with Susan Crawford. I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, and it means you really can't do the job.
Right.
Honestly. Yeah. If you cannot have discussions with people who you might not see eye to eye with. I mean, that for me is, I actually like those discussions. Mm-hmm. I like talking to people who have different views than me, because what I know is I don't always know. I'm not always right. You know, I think we just, that's how we expand our minds. That's how we consider different opinions. And even the legislature, I really enjoyed figuring out, how do I work? What are the issues I can work with my some of my Republican colleagues who I might disagree with on a lot of things, but I was, you know, really really happy that I found areas to work collectively with my colleagues on when maybe, you know, we didn't agree on a lot of other things. But there's usually something you can find that you agree on and that you can work on. And that really brought me a lot of satisfaction. And I think, honestly, I did got some really important bill pass when I was in the legislature because of these conversations that I had with, you know, legislators. And in some ways, I didn't care if they were Democrat or Republican on these issues, as long as we could agree that was important. And that happens on the appellate court. I'm constantly having discussions with my colleagues who I'm on these panels with. We are always going back and forth. And what about this? And what about this case? And it's a really fun, stimulating environment. And if you don't have that, you're not going to write the best decisions. Mm.
Mm. We're speaking with Chris Taylor. I'm Matt Rothschild, guest hosting along with Angela Lang here on the Maggie Dawn Show. You know, if and when, and I think it will be when you get on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I think you'd enjoy working with Justice Brian Hagedorn, who ran as an ultra conservative, but has ruled from the bench with an independent mind and also a moderate style in his writings by and large. And he wasn't afraid to join with his liberal partners there on the court on some really big cases. The biggest of all was the Trump versus Wisconsin case on the voting in 2020. And so I think that would be someone you could work with, don't you?
I can work with anybody. I mean, I really can. And I look forward. I'd be honored to work with Justice Hagedorn. I'd be honored to work with Justice Ziegler on the court. If I was on the court now, I'd be attempting to work with Rebecca Bradley. I mean, there's nobody I won't work with. And so, yes, absolutely. I look forward to working with him. I look forward to learning from him and hopefully, you know, maybe assisting him in thinking of different angles that he hasn't thought of. But that is the point of these appellate courts. And so, yes, that I welcome that.
You know, one of the things I think we've all learned here in Wisconsin since Scott Walker was first elected governor is how important statewide races are, how important even local races are. But races for governor, races for attorney general, races for Wisconsin Supreme Court, these are crucial. And I know there may be some listeners right now on civic media who are more concerned with Donald Trump and what happens at the national level, or more concerned what's going on in Congress. But the decisions by the Wisconsin Supreme Court impact us on a daily basis here. And you're right, Judge Taylor, that right now the only way to preserve our rights is through our state constitution and our state Supreme Court, because at the federal level, everything is in the hands of people who don't respect our rights. And that's why I want to encourage everyone to get involved locally in these races. And this is a crucial race. If people wanted to support you, how would they go about doing that, Judge Taylor?
Well, first of all, they can definitely go to my website, www.chris4justice.com. They can join the campaign. They can learn more, you know, go to my website, learn more about me, talk to your friends, talk to your families, talk to your community about why this race is so important. Come to events that we'll be having around the state. And, you know, those are some immediate ways that people can get involved. But this is, you know, this is a people-led campaign. If you care about justice, please join me.
Well, thanks so much for being our guest today, Judge Taylor. And we'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show. The number to call, 855-752-4842.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, and we are back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We're here with Nightlight with Pete Schwabe, who welcomes Madison film critic Rob Thomas to discuss this year's standout movies and the charm of strip mall bars. The episode wraps up with a chat about the Dining Gem Tornado Club and Madison's National Mustard Museum.
Welcome back!
I think that was like the first song we played, the bumper tune. One of the first ones, because everything I picked was like had to have night in it because it was nightlight. But that's when we were on at like 10 o'clock at night.
Well, it's actually, like you said before break, this is Netflix, not nightlight. It's Netflix.
Speech Wobba and Netflix. I would kill to be Netflix.
Yeah, right.
They own everything. Our question of the night, folks, you still have time to get something in. It's National Fresh Breath Day. What is the best way to tell someone they have bad breath? Would you do it? Would you ignore it and bear it and just let your eyes well up with tears? What do you do? And our next guest would not know anything about this because he has about the freshest smelling breath I've ever. And I, within 10 feet of the guy, you know he has great breath. And he is also a film critic in Madison. And he is the City Cast of Madison newsletter editor and does fine work there. You can also follow his Substack at Not That Rob Thomas. That's a lot of stuff Rob's up to, Conrad.
Yeah,
he's a busy guy. And he joins us now here on Nightlight, as he so often does. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Pete. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. My breath is fresh down here in Madison.
How do you do that? What's your secret?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think I could tell somebody they had bad breath. I might just suddenly give them like a Mint Oreo or something and try and subtly improve the quality of their aroma.
I've been known to fake an injury and just go down. And then it's like, you know, I take a knee and then they don't know. They're none the wiser. Or a good head fake too can get you out of some.
There you go.
Some bad breath radius. Hey, how are you, Rob? Are you having a good summer so far?
Yeah, the weather's been great down here in Madison after kind of a hot, sticky June and July. Yeah. Usually it's the reverse. So it's been great. Yeah. Movie-wise, I feel like we're kind of over the summer movie season.
And, okay.
You know, right, the stuff coming into theaters is kind of low-key, I think. And
right.
Yeah.
Do you have any intention of seeing Naked Gun?
I would love to. I was actually going to go Sunday night, and then it was just so nice out. I went and rode bikes with my daughters, which was awesome.
Oh, that's tough to pass up, yeah.
But yeah. But I mean, watching the original 1988 movie with Leslie Nielsen in the theater.
Yeah.
One of the great movie experiences. And then I used to watch
Agreed.
Police Squad on TV or in the early 80s, the TV show. So I'm all in on this. Did you saw it, right?
Listen, Police Squad ran for like maybe a half a season in the late 80s.
It's like six episodes.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And then it made a comeback, but I thought it was gone forever. And I thought it was so like when he looks in the telescope and he says, the microscope, he says, I don't have to look at DNA samples. He says, I don't see anything. Use your open eye, Frank. Oh, stuff like that. And I don't know, like I saw Naked Gun. I don't think they totally captured that. There's some big laughs in this.
Yeah.
But Leslie Nielsen was born to be that guy, whether it was Airplane or Naked Gun, in my opinion.
And, you know, Madison guys, right? Who did Airplane.
Zuckers,
and Naked Gun, Police Squad, the Zucker brothers. So, yeah, there's a bit. Although I guess they got kind of froze out of this remake, from what I heard. They got paid, but when they wanted to, at least one of them wanted to offer some jokes, they were, you know, it was kind of the bad breath scenario. They were politely turned away.
Bad breath of movie involvement.
Yeah.
I read the thing with David Zucker yesterday that said he was developing a script where Drebin's son was in his 30s. This is years ago. So he had a great attitude, I thought. He said, I'm not going to see this movie. I don't need to see it. But I wish the director well. I'm glad comedies are back. He texted the director. I thought he had a very professional response to it, but I kind of get where he's coming from too.
Yeah, that's nice, I think. But also, you know, I mean, I think I understand the need for the new writers and directors to do their own thing rather than lean on those guys. And one of them passed away, Jim Abrams. But
right.
But, you know, every generation gets their own Frank Drebin, I guess.
Exactly. Right? And Neeson's good, but he's like, he's just too much of an ass kicker, I think, you know, and it's like, I don't know. But anyway, there's some good laughs. I'd be curious to know what you think if you ever, decide to check it out. Let's talk about Sketch. You reviewed the film on your Substack. You liked it a lot and you said it was better than like Harold and the Purple Crayon. Tell us about Sketch.
Yeah, it opens, I think it's having sneak previews tonight and then opens wide tomorrow. And when I saw the trailer, I thought, oh, this is like one of those, you know, power of imagination family films and like the Harold and the Purple Crayon movie, or there was one called If last year with about imaginary friends with Ryan Reynolds. And they're just so like, I don't know, just so forced whimsy and like, but this one I thought was pretty fun. It was about this girl, probably 10, who is an artist, and she's mourning her mother's passing, and she gets out all her negative emotions by scribbling in her notebook and drawing all these monsters and horrible for a 10-year-old images and stuff. And her dad's cool with it, and like, however it works, however you're processing things, that's great. But then there's like a magic pond, which, you know, most properties have, I think, right? And
it's all how you look at it.
It is. I mean, you know, it's a perk on the real estate list. and all the monsters come to life, and they're all like, they look like they're hand-drawn or paper mache and start terrorizing the town. So it reminded me a lot of Gremlins or The Goonies, those kind of 80s movies that like, they're kids movies, but like not for too young kids. They might be a little scary. It moves fast. It's really funny. The adult performances, I think, are great. Tony Hale from Arrested Development plays the dad. And so I thought it was good. Yeah, it was a nice surprise. I'll say that for sure. Yeah.
It's on my list now. And I watched, I don't watch a lot of kids films anymore, but like you recommended Flow and I watched that and loved it. And this has the same type of feel. Like I'll probably check this out just because it seems different. And it's getting a 97 on Rotten Tomatoes with like 30 reviews, which is really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a fun one.
All right. Rob Thomas is here, folks. We're going to do a quick break for news and we are coming right back. And he broke down the movie so far this year. We'll talk about that and cool bars in Madison. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We are staying on the Nightlight trend on the Civic Media Spotlight, where Pete Schwabba continues his conversation with Madison film critic Rob Thomas, who discusses this year's standout movies and the charm of strip mall bars.
And you can't come back.
Welcome back, folks. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. That song, you probably don't know this, Con, was featured in the show The Wire. What I'm very excited about, I think it was the end of season 3, there was this great montage they did. And Dan Schaefer is coming on the show next Thursday. We're going to have a special Wire talk because he loves The Wire. Political consultant here at political guru here at Civic Media, Dan Schaefer, will be here next Tuesday. Tomorrow night on the show, Northeast Wisconsin filmmaker Craig Kinnett will be here in studio, and Deandra Marie, a local singer-songwriter, will be in the studio as well, singing. So it's kind of a Northeast Wisconsin theme tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Our question tonight in honor of Fresh Breath Day is, what is the best way to tell someone they have bad breath? Our pal, local actor Dan Davies says, just a quick question. Have you been chewing on your socks? That's a good one.
Have you?
I haven't.
That's good.
Dan has about the freshest breath. Not as fresh as Rob Thomas's breath, who joins us now over the stream from our state's capital in Madison. Rob is a film critic based out of Madison. Follow him at his Substack, Not That Rob Thomas, or you can read the CityCast Madison newsletter. Rob, as always, you guys had great articles in there. We'll get to some of those. What I want to ask you about first, though, you followed suit and you're doing like this thing that every film reviewer does. You're recapping the first 7/12 of the year. I love that.
I forgot.
That's so cliche, Rob.
Everybody does the first half. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I should have done that. I was on vacation around New Year, 4th of July. So I did the first 7/12, the only 7/12 top 10 list you'll find out there.
And that's what makes you unique. That's why you were such an effective film critic. So let's jump into your list. Hey, first of all, where can I see 40 Acres? You reviewed that on your Substack.
That was in theaters.
Okay.
About 6 weeks ago. I bet it's on video on demand now. I'm not sure though.
I might actually watch that tonight. You gave it such a good review.
That's a good one.
Okay. So let's talk about your movies so far in the first 7/12 of the year of 2025. Number one, you have Black Bag, right?
Yeah. That, nice. It's close between one and two, but Black Bag is just, I just think that's a perfect movie. I mean, right up my alley, British spy.
Yeah.
Thriller, but like much more about dialogue and performance and character than action. I mean, there's two, not one, but two dinner party scenes in that movie. So it's definitely not a John Wick movie. but, you know, Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett, yeah. And it's so twisty. But I felt like I could follow it pretty clearly what was going on. The supporting performances are all great. Pierce Brosnan looks like he's never looked in a movie before. Very sort of old,
right?
And cranky, and I really liked him in it. I think that's on Peacock now. If people want to watch it, it gets off to a slow start, I would say. Which I was hooked, but if you're expecting thrills and spills, you might be a little surprised. But I was locked in the whole time.
It's so great. Like, I agree with you. It started slow, but I have so much confidence or faith, I guess you'd say, in the writer. I think it was David Koepp, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I had faith in the writer and in Soderbergh's directing. I'm like, I know this is going to pick up. And it's not like I didn't like it when it was slow. I don't mind a movie that breathes and they kind of gradually get into it. But yeah, that was a good one. And then you had Sinners number two, which I might say is my favorite of the year so far, just because it was so cool and different and like on every aspect, like the look of it, the script, the music, the direction, the acting, it was just a masterpiece, I thought.
I agree. Yeah. Like I said, they're close. Like Black Bag is very controlled and precise.
Right.
Whereas like Sinners is taking big, big swings.
Yes.
A couple of them, towards the end, I wasn't crazy about, which I won't spoil. But,
sure.
But like the way it mixes horror and historical drama, the way you just buy that Michael B. Jordan is two different people, like you just completely buy that.
Yeah.
Like, and both performances are Oscar worthy, and the way it's like, yeah, just so scary, but also thrilling and funny and very thoughtful, I think, about art and music and the way it's co-opted and the way it frees people. Like, it's just so much going on in that movie. Ryan Coogler, you know, should be able to do whatever he wants for the rest of his career.
Oh, yeah.
After that. So yeah. I mean, and those, you know, there's 5/12 left of 2025. So positions may change.
Something could change. You know. Yeah. So yeah. I want to ask you about one more. You've got it rated really highly at number three, and I think you just reviewed this recently in your Substack. I did not read that review, but Ephes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great movie, and I just saw it.
Tell me about that.
I think you'd really like it. It's a baseball movie, but a very different kind of baseball movie. It's set in, I'm going to say, like Long Island or New England or something like that in the 90s, and it's these two amateur weekend teams that are playing on this field, which is going to be torn down to build a middle school. And some of the guys are old guys who, you know, this is the height of their athletic career.
Yeah.
Some of the guys are college guys who didn't quite make it, or, you know, former college ball players. And it really is less about the game than about observing all the different characters and their interactions. And it's fantastic. Like
wow.
It's very funny. It's very unusual. Like, sometimes you're watching the action on the field, sometimes you're watching the people watching the action. The camera kind of roves around, and it's just very, you know, a comedy, but also kind of very poignant, I thought, in a way, and very wise. And it didn't really get much of a release. Somebody in town, I think it was a local, the guy who runs the local video store, kind of rented a theater and showed it, and that's why I reviewed it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was one of my best theaters. It's weird title. Ephes.
Yeah.
Which, an Ephes. A term I didn't know before, but I guess it's like a pitch that's so slow that it kind of psychs the batter out. They miss it.
They don't know what to
they're
do.
Like, well, I can hit this thing, and then somehow sneaks by. Yeah.
I thought that was a changeup. But Ephus must be like maybe, yeah, maybe to the 10th power.
That's not described in the movie anyway. Yeah.
You, F1 is on your list at number 7. My son has seen that, also has seen it twice. And I agree with your review perfectly. The human stuff is pretty basic, you say, but it's such a deeply pleasurable movie to watch with all of the racing. And as you say in your review, you have to see it. You don't want to watch this one on the old black and white.
No, or on your phone.
On your phone,
even
yeah,
though,
right.
Even though it's an Apple movie, I think, yeah. But like... yeah, I mean, I saw it with my wife, and then when I was visiting my mom, we saw it because it was the one she wanted to see with Brad Pitt. And
sure,
I'm amazed how they made that movie, because when you realize, like, I don't think when I saw it the first time, I realized that they were shooting it on the F1 circuit. So they get the cars and the actors out right before the race and shoot for like 8 minutes and then get them all off. It really makes you feel like you're in the driver's seat and you are, you know, in that world. And,
yeah.
And I understood a lot more, especially the second time I watched it, about the strategy of it, like how the drivers work together. And
oh, yeah.
When you take your pit stops and what tires you use. And it does a really good job of, like, it's not just go fast. It's
yeah.
like there's all these other strategic elements at play. So for me, that's one of those movies that is going to be, I think, really rewatchable just because it's so fun to watch.
Very well said. My guest is Rob Thomas. He's a Madison-based film critic and the CityCast Madison newsletter editor. Check it out if you haven't already. They do great work. Is there anything else coming up, Rob, in the summer that you're excited to see before we move on from movies?
I'm seeing TV shows that are kind of interesting to me in August, like this new Alien. Have you seen the trailer for that?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've seen the trailer.
Alien Earth. It looks kind of, it's the guy oh, yeah. who did the Fargo TV show, which I love.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see what he does with it. It's set on Earth. Well, it's called Alien Earth. Of course, it's set on Earth. Right. And it's sort of more about like the evil corporation that you sort of hear about in the Alien movie. So I'm interested in that. I'm trying to think what else. There's one called, I love the Coen brothers. And one of the Coens has a movie coming out called Honey Don't with Margaret Qualley.
Right.
He made this movie last year called Driveaway Dolls that I did not like.
I didn't like it that much either.
I missed the brother. It's Ethan badly.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a Coen brother, so I'll give it a shot for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome. All right, so let's move on here. I thought this was great. I stumbled. I was in Madison all week last week, and I stumbled. I went to have breakfast in Middleton at a place called Grace's, and I see the National Mustard Museum across the street, and National Mustard Day was August 2nd. I'm like, this is, serendipitous. So I walked in, and I had Barry Levinson, who was the curator, on the show last week. He was a great guest, knew more about mustard than anybody combined. Why is the National Mustard Museum in Madison, Rob? Or Middleton?
It's kind of wild. Like, yeah, Barry Levinson, the rumor is that, like, he was an attorney in Wisconsin, worked for the state, and was a loved the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if he grew up there or what, but like when they lost the 86 World Series, he was so bereft. He went to the grocery store. And he tells the story that, like, the mustard was telling him, if you collect us, it will, or something like that. Even though, like, that this was 3 years before Field of Dreams, so I'm a little suspicious. But like, and he's just started amassing this collection of mustards, and then had a little exhibition space in Mount Horeb that doubled that in size, and then now has moved to Middleton, and it really is this like destination where you can get like mustards from like all 50 states and 70 different countries, and there's all this like old advertising for old mustard campaigns and promotional videos, and they have a mustard tasting every year where people come and try like super hot mustards and super unusual mustards, and then they have this thing that's like a big street festival where they have obviously mustard brats and hot dogs and stuff. And I last weekend I did try The chocolate shop had a limited edition mustard sundae.
What?
Well, it wasn't that bad. It was basically a caramel ice cream with raspberry honey mustard on it, so it was pretty good. It wasn't like a, you know, bright yellow French's mustard.
Right. Yeah, but we were amazed at all the stuff. He told us that story too about how he was staring at the mustard after the Red Sox lost. It was just such a great story.
Yeah, yeah.
So. That's great. And it's a great space too. It's a really nice, sparkling when you walk in there. It's incredible.
And it's right downtown. Yeah.
All right. So I want to ask you, Rob, we're going to do a very short break, and I want to ask you about strip mall bars because you seem to have an opinion on those. And then also, I ate last week, and we'll get into this after the break, but my son came over from Milwaukee and hung out with me last Saturday. We went to the Tornado Club, and I want to talk to you about that too. So we'll do that all coming up next. Let's bang a text out here, Con, if we can. How much time we got? We got like 3 minutes to the break? Oh, no, it's coming up. Conrad's got the fist up. That means get to the break. John Murray, our pal John, says, we all know better, don't we? Unless it's your old... Oh, wait, no, I got to read. All right, he has another text I have to read first. We'll do that after the break. It's Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And last but certainly not least, we have Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. The future is being built in Superior with a successful first phase for the state's first city-owned open-access broadband network. The plans predate the pandemic, but it was President Biden's American Rescue Plan that really got things rolling. On Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, he sits down with Superior Mayor Jim Payne about how the city is beefing up its online connections by replacing monopoly control with competitive pricing from multiple internet service providers.
7:52, we're back now. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, and our new D.C. correspondent, Cam Stevenson, has a D.C. newsletter called Below the Beltway. You can read it at beltway.news or through couriernewsroom.com, and his latest column is about what's happening in Texas. Texas tries to oust elected officials through legal gerrymandering and illegal schemes. Again, Below the Beltway from Cam Stevenson of Courier Newsroom. All right, let's turn to our Way Up North segment and talk to Jim Payne again, Mayor of Superior, all about what's happening in the northwestern corner of the state. And this time around, we're going to be talking about high-speed internet and the things that local governments can do rather than simply sitting around and waiting for the private sector to discover that you're there. Mayor Jim Payne, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you, Pat?
I'm great. It's so nice to see you here. I know that Superior is not the first, but definitely the latest in communities that have been looking for ways to kind of move the process along of making sure that your residents have access to broadband, which is the term for high-speed internet. So what is happening right there right now? What is it that you're kicking off?
Well, we're certainly not the first to recognize the need for high-speed, reliable, and affordable access to the internet, but we're the first city in Wisconsin, the first community of any kind to create a publicly owned open access broadband network. There is no other network of our kind in Wisconsin. And it's a unique public-private partnership where we own the actual network, the physical network, and we sell internet access to private internet service providers who in turn sell it to customers. So they compete freely on our network, the same way multiple delivery services, UPS, FedEx, US Postal Service compete on the roads that the city builds. So it combines public infrastructure with private competition.
And that, I'm glad to hear that explanation, because when I first heard about it, it made me wonder about a law that the Republican-led legislature passed several years ago that essentially was a ban on municipal networks, especially Wi-Fi networks, again, not wanting, you know, the public sector to compete with the private sector. A lot of people were upset by that, saying, hey, look, in some of these smaller communities, the private sector isn't coming up here anytime soon. They're only going to want to serve the big cities. So why block local units of government that want to provide this kind of service? It sounds like you have found the right path through of you're not the internet provider, but you have made it easier for the private sectors to come up here and extend service that they otherwise wouldn't do on their own. Does that sound about right?
Almost. The biggest difference is people don't have to come here to provide the internet. People are already here that can provide the internet. So because all we require people to do is be an ISP, they don't have to own this gigantic physical network, a multi-million dollar investment. That allows small businesses to go into business selling the internet to customers. So one of our first ISPs, it came from Duluth, Minnesota, right next door, and is now headquartered in Superior. It's a really small business. They only serve this community on our network. So what we did is, rather than have a giant monopoly, which was what almost every city in the country has, selling us internet at whatever price they want, our monopoly Spectrum, they actually raised the price of the internet during the pandemic. That was a kind of, we just saw that as unconscionable. How can you exploit people that way? So what we did is we combined what I thought is the best of the political philosophies on the left and the right. We believe in private sector competition to lower prices and increase innovation.
And is it a network that is accessible to everybody in the Superior area now, or is it starting in one area and building out?
No, we started in a pilot area, one neighborhood. It's actually my neighborhood. I'm talking to you on it right now. And so it was meant to show skeptics that this could actually work. One of the early successes, though, is our construction costs actually came in so far under budget that we're building out much faster than we had originally planned. So we will be lighting up the next neighborhood already this fall.
And how is it that the city was able to afford to do its part of this public-private partnership?
Joe Biden, really. The ARPA dollars that came to every community in the country. What a lot of people forget is that the ARPA dollars, which have been used for so many different things across the country, were primarily meant for utility infrastructure. And the first utility described in that law is access to broadband. And so we just took them at their word, and we used it to build a network. And so the first $5 million plus of this network was covered by that bill.
So President Biden had this American recovery plan and had a mission for it. And you took that literally and seriously and made it work. It sounds like perhaps the most textbook case of ARPA funds doing what they were intended to do at the time.
Exactly. In fact, we've been trying to build this network since before the pandemic, but the pandemic proved every single argument we made correct. When we had to send people home from work, send children home from school, and they did not have access to the internet, that meant they didn't go to school, Pat. That's what it meant. And people are still trying to pretend like that didn't happen. We lost a generation of kids that should have been educated and weren't because they didn't have access to this vital public infrastructure. The Biden administration gave us money to solve that problem, make sure that never happened again. And that's what we spent it on.
That's incredible. And you said another neighborhood is coming. How long do you think it might take for most, if not all, of the city to be served?
That's a political question. you ask me, I'd like to get it done in the next 2 years. But, you know, we have to prove that it's a success. I think we're already doing that. Like I said, we need to get to a 10% take rate. 10% of the area should be customers by the end of the year. I think we're going to cross that in the next month. And if we can show real success by the fall of next year, I think we'll have justified moving quite a bit faster than our original forecast of 5 to 7 years.
Superior Mayor Jim Payne with a great update from way up north. Jim, thank you so much. Good to talk to you again, Mr. Mayor. Have a wonderful day.
Always fun. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Coming up in our next hour, we'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO about the stories that he's following there. And then later, Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman will join us, and we'll talk about the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act and what the attacks on it could mean for voting in Wisconsin as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.